Good morning, everyone. The open meeting for the Federal Election Commission for February 8th, 2024 will come to order. Madam Vice Chair, we have a special motion for today's agenda.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda documents number 24-06A and 24-06B.
Thank you very much. The Vice Chair has so moved. I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion carries by a vote of 5-0. Myself, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Lindenbaum, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Broussard in favor, and Commissioner Dickerson absent and not voting. We have three items on today's agenda. The first item is Draft Advisory Opinion 2024-02 from Congresswoman Maxine Waters and Citizens for Waters. We have counsel for Office of General Counsel, Ms. Waldenstreicher, here, and we also have counsel for the requester, Ms. Beaver. Thank you very much for being here. Ms. Waldenstreicher, if you could give us a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda documents 2406A and 2406B are alternative draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by Congresswoman Maxine Waters and her principal campaign committee, Citizens for Waters. Requesters propose to design, publish, and mail brochures featuring Congresswoman Waters' endorsements of federal and non-federal candidates, together with her positions of support for or opposition to ballot measures to be voted on the March 5th, 2024 California primary ballot. Requesters propose to solicit and receive reimbursement from non-federal sources for the portion of the brochures devoted to each non-federal candidate and ballot measure. The request asks whether Citizens for Waters may receive reimbursement from non-federal sources for their proportional shares of the cost of the brochures using funds that do not exceed the applicable contribution limits of the Act and from sources that would not be prohibited under the Act from contributing directly to Congresswoman Waters. Drafts A and B both conclude that because the proposed brochures constitute federal election activity, Citizens for Waters may receive the proposed reimbursements only if the non-federal sources funds comply with the source prohibitions, amount limitations, and reporting requirements of the Act. Both drafts also assume that the funds used to reimburse the requesters will comply with the Act's source prohibitions and amount limitations. The two drafts disagree on whether the proposal would comply with the requirement that federal candidates solicit and receive only funds subject to the reporting requirements of the Act. Draft A concludes that because the Act does not require non-federal candidates and committees to separately report their reimbursements, the requester's proposal will comply with the reporting requirements of the Act, provided that Citizens for Waters properly reports its receipts and disbursements for the brochures as required by the Act and Commission regulations. Draft B, on the other hand, concludes that Citizens for Waters may not solicit or receive funds for reimbursement as proposed because the requesters do not represent that the funds solicited and received from non-federal sources will have been reported to the Commission as required by the Act and Commission regulations. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Waldenstreicher. Colleagues, open it up for questions for the Office of General Counsel or for counsel for the requester. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. And I don't have a question for the requester, you know, to start, but I do think it's just helpful to take this one as and start it off for the year since this is the first expedited one we have during this election year. And we have this expedited process for good reason, because questions come up before elections and people need urgent answers. But 20 days is very difficult for us, particularly those questions that may touch on other aspects of the law, as this one does. It can often be harder for some of us to get to a yes if we don't have time to receive comments and fully think through the thorny questions. So for the 7 people that follow our hearings, it may be helpful to know the process. When a requester submits an expedited advisory opinion request, our 20-day clock starts ticking when the request is complete. Then our fantastic policy lawyers put together a draft and circulate it to the commission. Then the commissioners either request changes, make their own changes, or are happy with the draft. And then commissioners make the draft or drafts public. And we try to get the drafts public a week before meetings to allow for robust comments. I know for me, it is incredibly helpful to hear from the community and those practicing, the nonprofit community, and anyone else who has something to contribute about their views of the draft, because we're human. There are often things that we miss. And on the expedited schedule, there often isn't time to get those comments in. So I think some of my colleagues may have questions about this, this advisory opinion request. I can say that I am still working through it, and I'm still trying to make sure that anything that I vote for isn't going to implicate or contradict any of our previous rulings in other cases, particularly when it comes to what is and or is not allowed and different reporting requirements for funds from state candidates. Ms. Beaver, I really appreciate you being with us. I don't have any questions for you on that front, except for if we were to deny this and say that you couldn't do it this way, would you then go through the vendors and have the vendors invoice the different candidates separately?
I think the committee would choose just not to pursue reimbursements and look at it as potential contributions to the state or non-federal candidates and committees.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any other questions for OGC or the requester vice chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Beaver, this is really a little bit unfair to you because we literally dropped this second draft moments before the meeting started. Have you by any chance had a chance to read it?
I did, just briefly, but I didn't get a chance to really dive into some of the footnotes, but I did get a chance to briefly review it, yes.
Well, to the extent that you would like to and feel like you are prepared to do so, I'd like to give you the opportunity to comment on it. As counsel indicated, the major difference between the two drafts is on the recording requirements. Your request stipulates that the committee would only accept funds that comply with the source limitations and amount. The amount limitations and source restrictions under the Act, but that you would not require the funds coming in to have previously been reported. And if you would like to respond to the general question as to why you drew that distinction and why you think that complies with Section 30125E of the FECA, I would be happy to give you that opportunity.
Thank you. I would argue that the draft A is more aligned with the position that the non-federal committees that are making these reimbursements are subject to the reporting requirements under the Act, because the payments that they're making do not fall under the definition of contributions or expenditures under the Act, and therefore would not be subject to the reporting obligations of the Act, because reporting obligations under the Act is only required if they make contributions or expenditures as defined. Here they're making payments for their own committees to appear on these slate mailers, and therefore are not making expenditures for the purpose of influencing a federal election. Rather, they're making the payments to influence their own non-federal campaigns. And that's the distinction that we make essentially of not having them subject to the reporting obligations to the Act and not requiring them to file federal election commission reports. Primarily, the committees are the non-federal committees are making reimbursements. Obviously, if they are making payments to the extent that they may be contributions, that would change the situation. Here, the expectation is not they're going to be making contributions, rather purely reimbursements for their appearance on these slate mailers.
Thank you, Ms. Beaver. Wouldn't that analysis, though, also mean that the committee that you represent could accept funds that are in excess of the amount limitations in the source restriction? Why is the analysis different for reporting requirements than it is for the other two provisions from 301?
Well, these committees are already subject to their own reporting obligations under state law. I'm not sure I understand the question, or perhaps I didn't understand.
Let me try it this way. 30125 of the FECA says that a candidate or a candidate committee shall not solicit, receive, direct, transfer, or spend funds in connection with an election for federal office unless the funds are subject to the limits, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of this act. Now, your request says that you're going to make sure that all the funds that are reimbursed comply with the limitations and prohibitions, but not the reporting requirements. And that's what I'm asking you, is why you are drawing that distinction. And if the argument that you're making is that they don't have to comply because they're not contributions or expenditures, then wouldn't that analysis also mean they don't have to comply with the limitations or prohibitions either?
No, I guess the committee is making the position that they would not be subject to, obviously, because they are subject to the limitations of the source limitations. I mean, they are subject to the reporting obligations to the extent that's required under the Act. But under the Act, these reimbursements are not contributions or expenditures as defined, so they wouldn't be subject to the reporting.
Thank you. Ms. Beaver, I have a factual question for an area that you're an expert in that I am not. To what extent does California state reporting requirements for state committees, are there any ways in which it requires less reporting than at the FEC? In other words, as you said, these state committees report to the FPPC, right? Is there anything that would be reported to the commission, if it were required to be reported, that would not also be findable through state disclosures and reporting?
I mean, I would argue that it's actually much more. California's got a very robust reporting obligation, has very robust reporting obligations. They have 24-hour reporting requirements 90 days out from the election. They have two pre-election reports prior to the election for these independent expenditure committees and candidate committees in particular. So as far as transparency is concerned, these committees have a very robust amount of reporting obligations. So I would say that their reporting obligations to the FPPC and publicly, because they are electronically filed, would be equal to, if not more, than what the FEC requires.
Colleagues, are there any other questions or concerns for here? Commissioner Traynor?
Thank you. Ms. Beaver, for appearing today and helping answer some of these questions. How long has Congresswoman Waters been involved in putting these type of brochures together and sending them out? Is this the first time that she's done it?
No, she's had this slate mailer for a number of years.
And so in the past, how has this been handled by the committee?
The committee has taken their position that they would do the reimbursements for the pro rata share.
Which is what, in answer to Commissioner Lindenbaum, that's how you would do it if you don't get an answer here?
No, going forward, because they would have the position that, you know, the FEC did not agree. That they would just make it that they would just be contributions.
Okay.
To committees.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I have an additional question, Ms. Beaver. You, if I understood you correctly, you are taking the position that these reimbursements are not contributions because they are only for the the pro rata share of the portions of the mailers that refer or support or oppose state level candidates or state level ballot initiatives. Is that right?
That's correct.
I guess I'm having trouble squaring that with the statutory definition of federal election activity that we're dealing with. So this is 3301.01.20. This is federal election activity, and it says it refers to a public communication that refers to a clearly identified candidate for federal office, regardless of whether a candidate for state or local office is also mentioned or identified. So I guess I'm wondering whether we have any precedent or ability to disentangle or bifurcate out the state portions of the mailers that can therefore be reimbursed and are not federal election activity from the federal portions of the mailers, which obviously would constitute federal election activity, or do we have to, by law, consider them as one unit, one entire mailer, where it doesn't matter if you have 99 state issues on it, if you have a single federal candidate, then the entire mailer has to be considered federal election activity. So I'm just wondering if you have any response to that concern that what the statutory definition indicates is that we must consider the communications as a whole if there's any federal candidate included.
I mean, the statute, for it to be, there is an argument that you're looking at this as a separate communication, essentially, with federal and non-federal committees. But it is one communication. So we understand that under the Act, it would be considered as one communication, though it kind of does put these non-federal committees at a disadvantage with not being able to potentially appear on these brochures that give them a lot of public influence, essentially.
That's helpful. I guess I have one other question or a couple of related questions, which is, does the soft money prohibition in 30125, the vice chair read it out, you know, the restriction on soliciting, receiving, directing, transferring, or spending funds, so on and so forth, unless the funds are subject to the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of this act. Does that provision create independent requirements, or does it merely incorporate what other requirements of the act may apply? In other words, what I'm trying to understand about 30125 is this an independent standalone requirement of reporting and of source prohibitions and of limitations? Or is it merely incorporating whatever ones apply elsewhere?
This would create an independent reporting obligation on the committees that would be reimbursing.
So that's what Draft B proposes, right?
Yes,
exactly. So what the law requires, though?
Under state law or under?
Let me put it this way. 30125 imposes the source prohibitions and the amount limitations, right?
Correct.
Does it create those limitations, or does it merely incorporate the limitations that exist in other parts of the act? I'm trying to be helpful here.
Sorry. It creates the limitation.
I would disagree with that. I would say that it doesn't create the independent requirements. In other words, it's saying you must, to the extent you are subject to the source and amount prohibitions in other parts of the act, right, they apply here. And to the extent you are obligated to report in other parts of the act, then you must report here. But if there are no other requirements on state committees to report, then you comply with those reporting requirements because there are none, yes, right? Mm-hmm. That's the point of Draft A.
Got it.
Is that 30125 doesn't create independent obligations. It merely incorporates ones that exist elsewhere, but there are no other reporting obligations on state committees.
Yes.
Therefore, you comply with the requirements because they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any other questions for Ms. Beaver? Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not so much a question to the facts. As Commissioner Lindenbaum mentioned at the start of this, with the scheduling and the draft that has just been circulated, normally we would have staff reach out to ask if there's an availability for an extension of time. Would your client be willing to provide an extension? I'm thinking just two to three days.
I think so, yes.
Okay, so would your client at this point provide a two-day extension? I know you'll need some time to reach out to your client. So
yeah,
I'm asking if you will contact your client and ask that question.
Yes, yes, I will.
Thank you.
To get that, to see if she will approve.
Appreciate that. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Colleagues, any other questions while we have counsel to the requester here, while we have the Office of General Counsel? This has been very helpful. Ms. Beaver, we are not going to vote today. Our deadline, short as it is, isn't today. We have some more time, and I think some commissioners want more time. I would encourage you, once you've had time to look at that second draft, especially to submit any written comments on that, so that we have an opportunity to benefit from that and again, you know, comments from the public as well. But we will, whether it's extended or not, by either within 20 days or 22 days, we will meet that deadline and get you, we'll then get commitments from commissioners to vote on tally and make sure that we can see this through. So thank you very much, Ms. Beaver. We appreciate your time. And thank you very much, Ms. Waldstreicher, for your time as well. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
We're going to hold this over and we're going to move on then to our second agenda item. Let me put this up. And this is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Madison Project, Inc., A21-11. And we have Ms. Brenda Wheeler and Mr. Kendrick Smith from the Audit Division. I also see Ms. Patius here. And if you could lead us off with a presentation about this ADRM, that would be great.
Thank you, Chairman Cooksey, and good morning to you and all commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Madison Project, Inc. The memorandum provides the Audit Division's staff's recommendation for the following finding: disclosure of occupation and name of employer, which is outlined in our draft final audit report. We're here today to answer any questions you may have on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wheeler, and to the entire Audit Division. Colleagues, are there any questions for the Audit Division, points of discussion? Mr. Trainer?
Mr. Chairman, just as a point of discussion, as it's currently drafted, subsection 3 is something that I can't support, and I know there are other considerations of ways to deal with that, but as it's currently drafted, I won't be able to support it.
Thank you for that. Colleagues, any other questions for the Audit Division or discussion points? Otherwise, we might be ready for motions. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Right, thank you. On that note, with Commissioner Trainer's comment, in the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Madison Project, Inc., I move to approve the recommendation subject to audit staff making the following changes to the PFAR. One, merging subpart 3 into subpart 1, such that former subpart 3 adopts the reasoning and analysis of subpart 1, and two, any appropriate and conforming edits.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Colleagues, are there any questions, points of discussion on that motion? Commissioner Trainer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate Commissioner Lindenbaum's motion, and I think I will probably be able to support it. However, I would like to see if my colleagues would allow for the Audit Division to reach out to the respondents and give them, I know they have 30 days from this point. So if they could give the respondents about 15 days just to give us their understanding of what happens with regard to moving the 200 or so transactions from subsection 3 into subsection 1, that would be helpful for me to consider when this comes back.
Commissioner Trainor, I guess I want to make sure I fully understand. Are you asking to amend the motion to direct the audit division to offer a response, or what are you hoping to? How firm of a commitment or of making sure this gets done are you seeking?
Well, so in the conversations that I've had with the audit division obviously says they will not consider any new responses from the respondent with regard to moving the subsection 3 transactions into 1, as Commissioner Lindenbaum has proposed. However, I think moving 200 transactions into that section, which is a completely different application of the law to those 200 or so transactions that are being added, I would like to see the respondents' comments with regard to how the law is applied to those 200 transactions. So I guess it would be a friendly amendment to Commissioner Lindenbaum's motion if we could direct audit to request that type of response. And maybe they don't give a response, maybe they do, but given the concerns that have been raised by the respondent up to this point with regard to due process, I think it's important to allow them as much process as we possibly can, and let them know that while the audit division will not consider those responses, that at least the commission will.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Trainor. I look to Commissioner Lindenbaum whether she would like to accept that amendment or whether she would like not to, in which case it'll be up to Commissioner Trainor if he wants to vote on it.
Well, let me ask the audit division. So what is our timing like on finalizing this audit? And I don't even know if it's possible to ask for tolling if we're at a close point here, if that's necessary. I'd appreciate to hear that.
Anyone from the audit division?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Yes,
We are limited by Directive 70 that does not give audit any authority to solicit additional responses from the committees. However, if the commission decides to direct audit, we'll be happy to do so. Unfortunately, with this audit, we are almost at the end of our goal for a PFAR approval, which is, I believe, April. But we will take any steps the commission directs us to do. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Trainor.
A question for Ms. Patius. Ms. Patius, so my understanding is that we would have 30 days to finalize from today, correct, with regard to this audit?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that question. We have 30 days to prepare the proposed final audit report that will incorporate any decisions the commission would make. Yes.
And so if we directed the audit division to seek responses within the next 15 days, that would still give us 15 days to consider those responses that we received from the respondent, correct?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
We will proceed whichever way commission decides.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Lamont, do you have any other questions for the audit?
Yeah, I don't have any other questions. I think I think giving council more opportunities is always good. I think in this case, they've had a lot of opportunities and we've accepted many of these arguments that they've made here. So I think if they submit something, then that is something that can always be considered, but I don't think there's a need to, put this into or change the process or what's in Directive 70. So I think I'd like the motion to stand.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that case, I would make a motion to amend Commissioner Lindenbaum's motion to include a direction to audit to notify the respondents that they can respond to the movement of the subsection 3 transactions into subsection 1 within the next 15 days.
Thank you very much. So we have Commissioner Trainor's motion to amend, pending motion of Commissioner Lindenbaum. Is there any discussion on that? All right, I'll call Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I largely am deferring to Commissioner Lindenbaum on this because it's our motion, but I do I do think the process already has many opportunities, as Commissioner Lindenbaum pointed out, for interaction with the audited committee, and I'm not comfortable with ad hoc changes to the process that is available to every other committee. So I'm going to respectfully vote against this motion.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any other discussion on the second degree, I guess, motion to amend? All right, if not, we'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed say no.
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 All right, that motion fails by a vote of 2-3. Myself, Commissioner Traynor in favor, Commissioner Lindenbaum, Commissioner Broussard, the vice chair opposed, and Commissioner Dickerson absent and not voting. So the motion then pending is Commissioner Lindenbaum's original motion as stated. Are there any other points of debate, questions on that? All right, seeing none, I'm going to call Commissioner Lindenbaum's motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
All right, and that motion carries by a vote of 4-1. Myself, the vice chair, Commissioner Lindenbaum, Commissioner Broussard in favor, Commissioner Traynor opposed, and Commissioner Dickerson absent and not voting. So thank you very much to the audit division. I very much appreciate your help. The last item on our agenda is Regulation 2014-10 and Regulation 2019-04, draft notice of inquiry for segregated party accounts. We have Mr. Tony Buckley and Ms. Scarlett Rufner and Ms. Rossing from the Office of General Counsel. If we could get a presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good morning, commissioners. Agenda document 24-05-A contains a draft notice of inquiry regarding party segregated accounts. The Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act of 2015 amended the Federal Election Campaign Act by authorizing separate limits on contributions to three types of segregated accounts established by national party committees. The amendment allows contributions of up to three times the usual amount into segregated accounts to defray expenses incurred with respect to one, presidential nominating conventions, two, party headquarters buildings, and three, election recounts or contests and other legal proceedings. These party segregated accounts are in addition to any other federal accounts that the committees may lawfully maintain. The commission received two petitions that asked the commission to issue new rules and to revise its existing rules regarding these types of accounts. If approved, the notice of inquiry would invite comments on the petitions and any other issues pertaining to party segregated accounts. The draft notice particularly requests comments from national party committees or members of the public with experience administering and interpreting information about party segregated accounts. The commission received one comment on the draft notice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rufner. Before I open it up, let me just say a couple things about these draft notices. They are seeking public comment on two different open rulemaking petitions. On the issues of segregated party accounts, a lot has changed in the almost decade since Congress created segregated party accounts, and the commission is considering how or whether to build out regulations on top of the statutory language. And you know, we need input on that. We need input from, as Ms. Rufner said, those with a lot of experience with these, namely the party committees who maintain and administer these accounts, but as Ms. Rufner also said, those who interact with them, those who monitor them, who are interested in their comings and goings. And so I, as with all of our comment periods, I strongly, strongly encourage people who are interested in this issue to submit comments from the bar, from the broader regulated community too. I can't really speak for other agencies in the federal government, but I can say, you know, for myself, that when people submit comments, I read them. They don't go into a drawer. They don't sit on anyone's desk. I read them. I read all of them. If they are substantive and have interesting things to say, they matter. They make a difference. And so I hope we get a robust set of comments about these petitions, or if people want to talk about whether we should do a different petition or a different rulemaking or do nothing at all. It's all of interest to me. So I think I would strongly encourage members of the public to speak up. So with that, colleagues, I'll open up for any questions or any additional comments that anyone wants to make. Vice Chair.
Well said, Mr. Chairman. I agree with everything you said, and similarly want to encourage robust comments. We're looking forward to hearing from the public.
Thank you. Anything else, colleagues? Otherwise, maybe an appropriate motion. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document number 24-05-A, Reg 2014-10 and Reg 2019-04, draft notice of inquiry for segregated party.
Thank you very much. Any comments or questions on that motion? All right, seeing none, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 All right, that motion carries by vote of 5-0. Myself, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Lindebaum, Commissioner Broussard, Commissioner Trainer in favor, and Commissioner Dickerson absent and not voting. Before we close out the meeting, I want to make one quick acknowledgement. Last week, year-end reports were filed. A huge amount of data, a huge amount of a number of reports came through fulfilling our transparency mission. I want to thank everyone who's involved in getting those out. I want to thank Ms. Chacona and the entire reports analysis division. I want to thank everyone in IT who handles the huge amount of data that it takes and the huge workload to get those reports online in real time in their raw form and then processed within 24 hours, really. It's a huge lift. And it's the biggest traffic jam you've ever could imagine through our data pipeline, and yet it all happens very seamlessly. I also want to thank people in public records and the information division who answer questions for people who are doing research about our data and clarifying it for the public. It's all really an important thing that we do that happens very seamlessly. I'm a big fan of FEC Filing Day, and I know the public is as well. So with that, let me say, Madam Acting Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters that we need to discuss today?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. There are no such matters.
Thank you so much. This meeting is adjourned.